My name is Jacqueline DeVito, and I will be interviewing Jack Burke with the assistance of Jan Northrup of the Kemper Memorial Park Preservation Fund. Jack was born on April 23, 1923. He served in World War II in the U.S. Rangers A Company 5th Ranger Battalion. His highest rank was Staff Sergeant. This interview is taking place via Skype on June 16, 2014 from Larchmont, New York. Jack is currently in Richmond, Virginia, and this interview is being conducted for the Veterans History Project of the Library of Congress. So the first question is, what is your family lineage?
Lineage?
Yeah.
Like, we're Irish or what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, where did your relatives come from? What other countries?
My father was Dr. Leo Burke. Mm-hmm. And he was from Bath, Maine, and his family came from Galway in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. And what about your mother's family?
My mother was from Missouri, and she met my father and when he was a medical student at Georgetown. And she was studying to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm. And where were you born?
I was born in Alexandria, Virginia.
And then where did you grow up? Did you grow up there?
Washington, D.C.
Virginia.
What?
Oh, sorry, I didn't say anything. What did your parents do for a living?
I didn't understand that one.
What did your parents do for a living?
Oh, my father was a doctor, and he died relatively young, and then my mother went to work in the government and raised three children.
Wow.
By herself.
How old were you when your father died?
About three.
And do you have any siblings? So you said you have two siblings?
I have I had a brother, Tom, who was a lieutenant in the infantry, but he was killed during the World War II. Mm-hmm. And I have a younger sister who lives in Melbourne, Florida, who's now a widow. So,
how many years younger is she than you?
Year and a half.
So, can you describe what your community was like growing up in D.C.?
Well, I had a very active life growing up. I was very active in sports, and we, all three of us, since my mother was working, we were allowed to go over to a playground, and we were cared for there, and we played all types of sports. Baseball, swimming, track, things such as that during the summer. And then I played baseball, American Legion ball, and then, let's see, then I went away to boarding school up in Massachusetts to go to high school.
What was that like? Did you enjoy high school?
Yeah, I went up to a school called Northfield Mount Hermon up in northwestern Massachusetts, and it was strictly a boys' school, very strict at that time. It's now co-ed, but it was very strict, and it was good. I think it rounded me off, but because it was... You had to adhere to study periods and meals, and your life was regimented, and it was good for me because I was pretty much on my own prior to that, and my brother went there too, so that helped.
Mm-hmm. So, how often were you home during the year and not at school? How often were you home during the year and not at school?
Well, we went the first part of September, and we stayed there until December the 16th, and then we went home for 2 weeks, and we came back and on January the 2nd, and we stayed there until April, and we had a week for Easter, and came back, and then school ended around June the 12th or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I'd go home about two times a year.
And your sister lived at home with your mother?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you were growing up, did you have friends from many different backgrounds, or were they all like Irish and the same descent as you?
Oh, well, all types of friends. Yeah, played ball with American Legion ball with Irish, Greeks, Jews, a complete mix of everything.
Mm-hmm. And so, how old were you when the U.S. during Pearl Harbor? How old were you?
I think I was around 17.
So you were still in high school?
Oh, yes. I remember that day vividly.
Can you describe where you were on that day?
Yeah, I'd just been out. It was a Sunday afternoon, and we came back, for a bunch of us, well, about four or five guys. We'd go out for a walk on Sunday afternoon around the campus and in the woods and stuff like that. Came back, and somebody said they just bombed Pearl Harbor, the Japanese. And I had the typical question that everybody asked, where's Pearl Harbor? Yeah. It didn't ring a bell until maybe it was the next day when all of us began to learn about it through the radio, the significance of what happened. And then you're only 17 years old, and you don't think it's going to affect you. I didn't feel a part of it. I felt that it was bad, but I just went about our lives and didn't give a thought to going in the service at that time.
Were you optimistic about the U.S. going into the war? Did you support it? And did you think that they would potentially win?
Oh, I never thought about whether we would win or not, but I thought we should go into the war. Mm-hmm. And I thought, just human nature, if you're going in, win. Mm-hmm. But I didn't stop and say, we're going to win the war.
So did you join the military the following year, or when did you join?
Oh, let's see, I graduated from high school in 42 and went in the June, and I went to college in August that year, and in November I received a notice from the draft board, because I was then 18, mm-hmm. that they wanted me to come in for a physical, but since I was in college, I had the option of going into continuing your education under a government program like V6 or V12 or whatever it may be, or else if I didn't do that, I would have to report for the draft. And I have no good explanation, but I just went into the draft. Mm-hmm. It was that simple. And then in December, I was in the service.
So you don't know why you just decided to...
Oh, I I guess underneath it all, I figured I had to do my part, and whether it was going to be in through the draft or be in college or in study, and I just think I guess I'll take credit for that now, saying that I wanted to do something different than going to school.
Where were you going to college at the time?
At that time, I was going to a college in North Carolina called Davidson College. It was a liberal arts school. And then after the war, I went to Georgetown and finished up there.
So, did you choose to go into the Rangers? How did that come about?
Say that again.
How did you become a U.S. Ranger?
Oh, I was in the, after I got drafted, they put me in an outfit, put me in an infantry outfit, 26th Division, 104th Infantry. And I was in that for about five, 6 months. And we were training in Stark, Florida, and then we went to Camp Gordon, which is now Fort Gordon, in Macon, Georgia. And I just wasn't a happy camper. Everything seemed to be going wrong. We didn't do, as an outfit, it didn't seem that we were doing things right. And I wanted to be in an outfit where I was proud to be in it, and with a bunch of guys who really wanted to win the war. So I jokingly said to one of the fellows, I said, I don't care what comes along, whether it's the paratroopers or the submarines, I'm going to volunteer out. And so the Rangers came by and said they were looking for volunteers to form a battalion, and that they were interviewing up at such and such a headquarters, and if you wanted to volunteer and see if you could get accepted, you apply. So I applied and went up for my interview, and they said, well, why do you want to be a Ranger? And I said, I want to be in an outfit that I'm proud of. The guy, the colonel, well, it was a major, he said, fine. And he asked you about your background, what you thought about the service and what you wanted to do. And I wanted to be with a bunch of guys that worked together, and you had a good team. And we did. It was the wisest move I made during the entire war.
So the first unit you were in, were you just with them for training, or?
That was for training, and I was going with being trained to for combat as a rifleman. And, you know, when you're in the Army, you just do what they tell you to do. They don't ask you your opinion. So that's good. But in the Rangers, they treated you like an adult. They tell you you're going to do such and such and why you're doing it and what do you do if you succeed and what do you get if you fail. Mm-hmm. If you fail, they throw you out of the Rangers. So they built this esprit de corps within the operation of the Rangers, and it's in the paratroopers, it's in special services, Marines have it, and it's just something that is pretty difficult to build in, but the people that are in those organizations have a spirit and desire to commit themselves to do what they're supposed to do and watch out for their buddies. So that's it.
So then, what did you do once you joined the Rangers?
We went into a training at Camp Forest, Tennessee in September, and they told us that they were going to weed us out and they were going to just keep the best ones. And that's what they did. And boy, they worked us to death. They would have speed marches and wake you up early in the morning and fall you out and speed march you and bring you back and eat breakfast, fall you out again. It was good training. Didn't like it, but it was good.
Yeah. And what, can you just mention what unit you were in?
Say again?
What unit were you in?
5th Ranger Battalion, A Company.
So then, was that the only training you did, or did you have any training beyond that? Did you go anywhere else for training beyond that?
Did I know anybody?
Was that the only training you did, or did you go anywhere else?
We went to other places. We trained in Camp Forest for, a couple of months, 3 months. And then we went down to Fort Pierce, Florida, and trained with the Navy, and did some amphibious training. And from there, where'd we go? I think, if I recall, we went to Fort Dix. Mm-hmm. And from Fort Dix, we got on the boat and went overseas in December of 43. We were on the water from December to the first part of January. And we landed in Liverpool, England. And we were on the, went over without a convoy. We went over on the British ship, the Mauritania, which was a big ocean liner that was converted for troops.
And then what did you do there?
Well, we got on the train in Liverpool and went to Wales in the town of Leominster. Leominster, we call it, but it was Leominster. Mm-hmm. And we trained there for a month or two, and then we went, they put us on a boat, we went somewhere and got on a boat, and we went to Scotland, and we did commando training up at the commando base, a lot of amphibious training, and it was not too enjoyable in March and April, when they drop you off in that water, it's like being thrown into a refrigerator. In fact, it snowed up there while we were training and in the water. And you'd drop you off up to your shoulders, and you'd wade all the way in, and then you'd keep your wet clothes on all day, and they'd take you up into the moors, and we'd run maneuvers, and then we'd sleep out soaking wet. All that stuff. So we stayed up there until I think it was around April. And then we came back to a place called Braunton, England. And we did some more amphibious training and cliff climbing. Did a lot of cliff climbing. And we had some other types of maneuvers and landings and stuff, and then I think the name of the town we were in was Braunton, England. And after that, we went to outside of Dorchester, and then we were being prepared for the invasion, but we didn't know it at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had done a lot of cliff climbing. And they put us in an area where we couldn't get out of, and it was secured. And we stayed there about 4 days, I'm estimating 4 days. And then they put us on trucks, and they trucked us into Weymouth. And we went to the docks and got on these landing craft that we were assigned to, and went out to the mothership And we were getting a pretty good idea that we were going on to something big. We weren't on maneuvers. And they were issuing us live ammunition and gearing us up. And we got on the ship, mothership. We were on the HMS Leopold. And I think that was June the 1st. Because the invasion, we found out when we got on board, was supposed to be on the 5th. But we didn't, we went out, but the seas were so rough, we had to come back and to Weymouth, and we had to refuel. And, we were refueling, and there was a British destroyer refueling off the same ship. And a guy stuck his head out of a turret. It was a guy I played football with in high school.
Oh, really?
Bob Smith. So we jumped from ship to ship and came up and brought us some Coca-Colas, some oranges and stuff like that. And we talked and he had to go back. And then that night, well, that day before, we were given our assignments and what we had to do and what the primary objective was. And if that didn't work, we had a secondary. So we were well prepared, went out on the 4th, went out about, a couple of miles in the landing craft, and then they got the word that General Eisenhower had called it off, and we went back. And so we just stayed on the ship. They couldn't release you because you had too much information, and they couldn't wait too long because the tides would be different, and we wouldn't be able to have the go in. So Eisenhower made the decision to go, and we went the next day. And I guess we were ready as we're ever going to be. And when you're 18, 19 years old, you don't have that much foresight about what you're going into. You just know you're supposed to do something, and you're committed to do it. And that was it. So we went in.
Were you nervous then?
I can honestly say I was not nervous. I was more, in the word is, intrigued by what was going on. The airplanes, the sky was just loaded with planes. Mm-hmm. It was dark. They woke us up around 3 o'clock and gave us breakfast, and then we got in a landing craft, and I think we pulled away about 4:30, and then you have to go out and rendezvous, so... I don't know how to describe it. It was just awesome. I don't like that word, but I used it. It was just mind-boggling that so many planes and ships, it seems like you could walk on the water because there was so many ships, but then you'd lose contact with them and you go into your holding area. I think they call it beaching area. Mm-hmm. And then you have to hold, and so everybody would go on at the assigned times. And we were supposed to hit the beach. I'm working from memory. I think it was 6:45, somewhere around there. And we were waiting for the flare to go up. And make a long story short, we went in at, 6:45, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Didn't make any difference. There was a lot of shooting going on, and the battleships opened up right off of our right flank, and it was the USS Texas. And it was the first time I'd ever seen a battleship, and much less than it started firing. And when it fired, it was sitting in the water flat. They fired all their guns at one time, to 15 inches, I think, and it would just take the ship and just rock it right back on its side. You'd think it was going to go underwater, mm-hmm. but then it'd come right back, and those guns would go, and they'd send out smoke rings as big as a house, bigger than a house, just the smoke rings going out, and that fascinated me. Mm-hmm. And I told the guy sitting next to me in the landing craft, I said, look at those smoke rings. And I said, if you look, and you could see the shells going out. It seems impossible, but you could see those 15-inch shells
Wow.
exploding on the beach. So And then when we got the, I'll stop there and let you ask questions.
Okay. Well, is it true that this was your first day of combat?
Yeah. My first day.
So your first...
I try to think... I don't want you to think that I'm one brave soul, because I later got as frightened as anybody, but could get frightened. At that time, when they dropped the ramp, and we knew what we had to do to get up to the seawall. We were not to stop. We weren't supposed to stop and get behind any of those hedgehogs or any of the elements that are in the water and hide. Your chances are